Good morning. You are watching The Program with Ted Rall and Jamarl Thomas. It is Wednesday, June 24th, 2026. Leftists are kicking ass in New York City. Good morning,
yes,
Jamarl.
Yes, we are.
So, big primary results coming out of New York City. We talked about this yesterday, that all the Mamdani slate of Democratic Socialists and leftist-aligned candidates with Zohran Mamdani were all favored to win. They all won. They exceeded their their expectations. These were landslide victories by the far left, as in within electoral politics. These would be far left, not in terms of, you know, objective politics. And so, you know, we've got to talk about that. We also have this issue. We also have this story from the UN, which is our main story. Israeli security forces, there's substantial evidence, deliberately target, abuse, rape, and murder Palestinian children as part of a policy of genocide to reduce the Palestinian birth rate.
Of course.
Pretty disgusting. And not, I'll take the pretty out of there. And nothing pretty about it. And that Antifa supposed attack against the ICE facility in Texas last year got some crazy prison sentences. The so-called leader of this group got a 100 years in prison. The other participants, none of whom were accused of engaging in violence at all, got 50 to 70 years. And one person who wasn't even there got 30 years in prison for being part of this quote-unquote terrorist conspiracy. So we got to talk about this government clampdown, as the Clash would have called it. You know, it's pretty crazy. Where, Jamarl, shall we start?
Oof, both of those are good. Let's start with the elections, because I think those are the ones that you're in New York. So this is right up your alley. Mamdani killed it. Mamdani killed it. Yeah. By the way, I saw on CNN talking about it, and CNN pointed out how AIPAC was toxic, like meaning any candidate that was getting money from AIPAC was basically at a disadvantage in that race when they were asking New Yorkers about a particular candidate. So if they said, okay, this person's running against this other candidate, and they said, well, this guy is getting AIPAC money, that was a disadvantage in the race.
True.
By a magnificent percentage. Like that is a new norm. That is a new norm. Candidates killed it. Mamdani, his selections, let me ask you this. Do you think it's Mamdani and his coattails? Do you think something else? Do you think it's just a political climate? Do you think it's a perfect storm? I mean, you're there. What do you think of the main
perfect storm? Mamdani has coattails, for sure. Because he's a fresh face. He only took office January 1st of this year. He hasn't even been in there for 6 months. So he's still like, you know, when New Yorkers who are in a hurry are like, oh, who should I vote for? And if they like Mamdani and they were fans of his endorsement at this point, you know, there still hasn't been one giant blizzard where the snowplow didn't show up at your house yet. So he's still popular, and people are definitely going to follow his advice. But also there's a general very anti-AIPAC, anti-Zionist tone in the Jewish community in New York City, which is the largest community of Jews in the world outside of the state of Israel. A lot of liberal Jews are sick and fucking tired of being tarnished with the Zionist label by AIPAC and people like that who are trying to say, like, to be Jewish is to be pro-genocide. That's bullshit. The biggest opponents of the genocide have been the Not In Our Name Jewish Voice for Peace and other protesters. So they've been the loudest, they've been the biggest, they've been the most strident. So this was their chance to express themselves. I think that was a huge thing. Also, there's the rent is too damn high and people are pissed at the wealthy, and they don't like it's not even the fact that they are rich, it's the way that the rich act. They're insulating themselves. It used to be like, you know, in New York City, everyone from the super poor to the billionaires rode the subway. You know, you couldn't really hide. Even if you were a billionaire, you had roaches and rats in your apartment because it was New York. That's just not true anymore. These people have really insulated themselves in a way that just didn't used to be the same thing. And the way they talk, like, oh, we create the jobs, you should be grateful for us. No New Yorker thinks that. Every New Yorker who's not a billionaire says, leave, we don't care about you. Go, go, go. You're not making our lives any better, you're making it worse. So it's a lot of stuff. But I think it's really important for us to talk about left-wing populism, because it doesn't get the coverage that, you know, Trump and MAGA and right-wing populism get, which they need that, they deserve that coverage. I mean, you know, the dudes, they got the presidency twice. But this is a big deal. It's a AIPAC is crowing about some races they won out in the hinterlands in flyover country, but they were going to win those anyway. You know, they're losing their, you know, they're not as powerful as they used to be. The tide is running out. And if they're not that powerful, then they can't instill fear. And if they can't instill fear, then you're going to see more independent people standing up and speaking out against Israel and against Zionist policies. I mean, I guarantee you right now as we speak, it's 9 o'clock in the morning at AIPAC headquarters in Washington, D.C., which may or may not be on K Street. They are meeting and they're saying, okay, where do we go from here? What do we do about it? We have a crisis on our hands.
If it bleeds, we can kill it, as said and by some famous person. I think it was Arnold Schwarzenegger in Predator. No, you're absolutely right. If the moment that you could show that this is a fallible entity and that running against that entity works, mm-hmm. then people, by definition, will run against that entity as a pathway to political power. Now, obviously, AIPAC is going to take issue with this, and they're probably going to start putting money into other groups without the name of AIPAC in order to try to get that money to candidates, in order to get political control of those candidates in Congress. But let's be very clear, it's a wounded entity that is weak, especially if you're talking about in key democratic contingencies, right? Even, I would argue, in Republican districts and things, they would take issue with this idea that the Trump administration is functioning at the behest of a foreign power in the way that it comes across and the way that it's discussed. So even among Republicans, the tide has changed in regards to the way they see Israel as, you know, you guys have been killing babies. Why is that okay? And why should a political entity or any political entity or individual support an entity that is effectively doing that and defending that policy? So no, I agree with you. I guess the question is this a sea change in regards to, let's say, Democratic politics going forward, even among liberals that can see the writing on the wall regarding AIPAC? I hope people do run against it. I hope Mondani has shown the pathway. Because, you know, sometimes you can be scared off if something is a political orthodoxy until you challenge the orthodoxy and find that the orthodoxy is standing there with no clothes on. Hopefully, this is a new norm, not a flash in the pan.
I think it is. And we, by the way, please like, follow, and share the show. We'll bring in Robbie a little bit later to talk about some changes in the Rumble Creative Program that we kind of are going to need your help. It's not going to be like asking for money, actually. We're going to be just asking you to chime in the chat. Believe it or not, if you don't ever chat, if you just pop in once a month and just say hi or put in an emoji, that's going to help us, and Robbie will explain that. But
it's, by the way, is that chat and comments or just chat itself?
It's Robbie. That's just the chat, right?
It's the live chat. Comments do not count, so it has to be while you are live streaming.
Okay, so right here and now, right now.
Right here and now. If you're on the live chat tab, basically, I'm just going to explain what's going on.
We have 63 people right now watching us on Rumble. So if you have never chatted with us in the past month, please come on and just say, yo, and leave. You don't have to, you know, participate.
Yeah, exactly. So basically what this is that Rumble, it's a couple of things. One, the creator program, it was very easy for people to come in. So that's really been diluting the pool that people get paid from. Plus Rumble has purchased a company called Northern Data. So Rumble now owns 9 data centers. So now they've got to pay for that. And the way they're going to pay for that is by weeding out smaller creators. Where they're doing that is by making it where people have got to engage in a live stream on a chat. So, for example, TMI has well over 1,000 watch hours. That's not a problem. But for the month, it's only got 44, 45 unique chatters for the month. What that means in English is that come August 1st, if TMI does not have at least a minimum of 75 unique chatters in the month, then it loses its funding. It loses its sponsorship support. The same thing happens with my gaming channel. Gaming on Rumble is very small, it's very weak. So what they're doing is that they're punching down, really just driving out smaller creators. And the moral of the story is, we need your help. We don't need a dime from you. What we need from you, though, is
dimes.
That's a separate issue. But one of the reasons why Rumble is doing this, though, is so that way the company, like the channels that are in the creator program, get paid more than what they are now. So that way you're not so dependent on those donations.
So we'll come in and talk about this a little later for people who join the show midstream. But thank you, Robbie. Okay,
yeah, so lurking no longer works. You got to be at least once a month. Say hi. Call someone a name. Give them the bird. Whatever.
Yep. You have my permission to use the T word. Tard. Anyway, okay. That
has to be the Rumble chat, not YouTube.
Just right. Come in and chat balls and okay. Leave.
Cool. All right. So I want to also point out, just as one of the, and before we take some of the comments and questions here, the district, Brad Lander, who ran for mayor initially against Zahran Mamdani, dropped out and endorsed him and campaigned in a very father-son kind of way, very cute. He's twice, Zoran's age. But they had a cute bromance. Those guys, Brad Lander was endorsed by Zoran. He's not technically a member of the Democratic Socialist organizing group, but he was endorsed by Mamdani. He basically is a socialist. And he carried a district that encompasses all of Lower Manhattan, AKA the capital of American finance, includes all of Wall Street, all the people who live near Wall Street, near Battery Park City, and also a lot of really wealthy people who live in Soho, Tribeca, the West and East Village. These are all rich New Yorkers. And that district jumps across New York Harbor over to big swaths of Brooklyn, including Williamsburg and East Williamsburg and Greenpoint, that are predominantly Orthodox Jewish. So it is stunning.
Not that my name.
That is a major rebuke to AIPAC. I mean, is AIPAC dead and done? Sadly, no. But the point is, they're wounded.
I suspect Jews in New York feel like I do about the Iran war. Like, Trump is doing this in the name of America, quote unquote.
Right.
And even the murdering of the fishermen, that was being done in the name of America. Whereas I look at this and think to myself, this is humiliating and shameful as an American watching the president act like this and act like this in our name with our tax dollars. And I guess if you're Jewish, you probably feel the same way. You don't want that stain on you that they're effectively putting on you by claiming, we represent all of Judaism. We're a Jewish state, and Zionism and Judaism are somehow really very similar, if not the same thing, and criticizing one means you criticize the other. Yeah, I wouldn't. I mean, I don't blame them for that. God bless them for that.
Yeah,
God bless them for it.
By the way, we didn't have this scheduled, but I was just reading it before I went on the air. I'm sure you'll find it of interest. The New York Times had a piece where they talked about how women who are, unorthodox in Tehran and other Iranian cities are now joining pro-Iranian government demonstrations against the Americans and against the Israelis. These are women without hijab. These are women who wear have pink hair and are wear form-fitting clothing. In other words, these are the liberals. These are the wild and crazy lefty girls and their male friends, right? Comrades. And now the government is welcoming them in. You could say maybe that's opportunistically, but they're also coming of their own accord. I mean, basically, the United States and Israel has managed to unify the Iranian people who were in a lot of discord before all this.
Yes. I mean, if the wildest thing that I've ever seen, and probably the most beautiful thing I've ever seen, was this woman with long hair flowing in the wind, Iranian. And the same woman who was liberal, who would have been at protests against the government before, was out there screaming, "Iran needs a nuke." I'm like, holy shit.
Like, yeah.
Man, you talking about if you were to screw up a process or get a process wrong, you have radicalized people who were liberals, who were protesting the government at first, who now see what, let's say, people during the Iranian Revolution saw. Meaning, if you're in your 20s, you didn't live during the Iranian Revolution. In your 30s, you didn't live during the Iranian Revolution. You didn't see what the Shah was doing in that country.
Right.
Now, they get it. Beforehand, they could say, okay, well, I know the government is claiming that the West is against us, but we think it's the government that's acting up. We think it's the government that's not offering its hand to America. Well, in the middle of negotiations, your government was attacked. Negotiations, by the way, that your government, I would argue, should have never entered into, or at the very least, should have never had to enter into, if that makes sense. Meaning, what we do with our country is our business. We're a sovereign actor. F off. Who the F are you? And in this particular case, now they see it for themselves. We were in negotiations. We were attacked in the middle of those negotiations. You're putting sanctions against us. You've attacked our country when we didn't do anything to your country. Unprovoked war of aggression where you tried to destroy the state. As a rational human being, even if you were a liberal, what is your thought process? Your thought process is, we got it to support the government. The government is being attacked.
I would do the same thing. I didn't vote for Donald Trump. I don't like this government. If we were attacked by a foreign country, I would volunteer. I would join up. I would fight. Yeah. You know, with very few exceptions, there's always a hope on the part of Air Force people, right? That, like, you know, you can don't have to send boots on the ground and have tons of caskets coming home. Well, we can bomb the shit out of another country, and somehow they're going to understand that we mean well. But that doesn't work almost. I mean, I can point to a few exceptions, but for the most part, it doesn't. It tends to unify the population against you. During World War II, if you lived in Germany and you didn't vote for Hitler and you hated the Nazis, but, you know, the RAF dropped a bomb on your street, it was a fire truck with a swastika that showed up to put out the fire. Right. It was an ambulance with a swastika on it that came to pick up your relatives and tried to save their lives. And I mean, when I was in Afghanistan in 2001, when it was the Americans who were bombing areas that were controlled by the Northern Alliance, but the Taliban fire patrol showed up to put out the fires, everybody yelled, jeered at the Americans, the pilots, including American reporters on the ground. And everybody cheered the Taliban fire patrol. The point is, it doesn't work. All it does is pull people together. So, I mean, Nazi Germany and I think Imperial Japan probably would have fallen sooner if we hadn't, like, engaged in carpet bombing. You know, that unified the populations behind those regimes and made them more desperate.
I don't know. I mean, you still have to win the war. And yeah. I got to be honest, Japan and Nazi Germany were...
So target the military. So target the factories. Target the military complexes. But don't level Dresden. Don't firebomb Tokyo. Don't nuke Hiroshima.
I get that, and I agree with you about the nuking of Hiroshima and Nagasaki. It was unnecessary. The Russians were already pressing.
I always point to that to be like, oh, that's, you know, Hamas got that. Like, yeah, it's disproportionate. But look at what, you know, the U.S. did in Hiroshima and Nagasaki. I'm like, those were crimes too.
True, but. I'm not a bleeding heart for them, for Japan and Germany. I'm sorry. They were monsters in the fullest sense of it. What Israel is doing right now is worse than... Israel seems to take a level of pleasure out of misery in a way that you could say the Nazis did, but the Nazis were more governmental oriented around it, whereas Israel just seems to enjoy just nasty stuff like raping of kids and raping of people and watching it, doing it in groups systemically, almost as policy. It's very bizarre and strange. And I'm using that to make the point of saying
people kept trying to cap Hitler. You know what I mean? Like they, no one's ever gone after Bibi. It's like, it's
they agree.
It, but I'm just saying that, like, it seems like there was more of a resistance in Nazi Germany and more disgust with Nazism than there is disgust and opposition and resistance within Israel.
Yeah, there don't seem to be any, like, talking about. There are no leftists. There are no liberals in the case of Israel.
Collective punishment is wrong, JT. It is murder. It is murder on an industrial scale. What you're saying that you have no problem with is the murder of hundreds of thousands of people had zero say in what the government was doing. It doesn't matter if that was a newborn baby. It doesn't matter if it was a toddler. It doesn't matter if it was a schoolgirl. It does not matter if it's just some schmuck trying to make a living. That is wrong. That is 100% wrong.
Robbie, I never said that I was for collective punishment.
You just said you had no problem with the Japanese and the Germans getting evaporated.
Just to be clear, I say I'm not a bleeding heart. Okay, for one, I didn't say that.
You did say
that. I said that they should not have dropped the bomb on Nagasaki and Hiroshima. I was very clear about that, that it was unnecessary, that Japan was already at the breaking point. So true. Just clear about that.
Was Dresden a war crime?
Wait. If you're going to parrot me, then at the very least you should hear what I'm saying, my take.
Sounds good.
I'm saying I'm not a bleeding heart on this. I'm not a bleeding heart for the Nazis. I'm not a bleeding heart for the way Japan behaved. Japan and Nazi Germany were rabid. And the things that they did to South Korea, Koreans, and to the Chinese is utterly disgusting. Look it up.
Agreed.
Now, you can make a case of saying, well, this was just their government. We disagree that it was just their government. And all of those German soldiers who acted like, well, those were the Nazis, those weren't us. Nonsense. They were also committing war crimes. So, no, I'm not a bleeding heart for it. Do I agree with collective punishment? Obviously, I don't. I've said it on more than one occasion that I don't agree with collective punishment. Am I a bleeding heart? No.
Then make the case then. Explain it to me. Let's just talk, I'm retarded here. So what you're saying is, and listen, I get it. You don't have to be bleeding heart, but you don't have to be a bleeding heart, though. I understand that. But you can't, on one hand, condemn what Israel's doing over in Gaza, blowing up schools and all this other stuff, the starvation and everything else. And on the flip side, say, well, no, those damn Germans had it coming. It's the same freaking thing. It's the same thing.
It's not the same thing.
It is the same thing.
It's not the same thing. For one, you have a force, meaning Israel, that has nukes and a full military that is out there slaughtering women and children for the sake of slaughtering women and children in order to steal territory. In Germany's case, you have a group of lunatics who effectively invaded countries with the idea of creating living space to murder millions. How are you considering these things to be the same thing? These are radically different situations.
Okay, well, for there's a couple different things. One, if you're going to seek to impose a military defeat on another nation, which, by the way, Germany and Japan needed to be defeated.
Yes.
Then you go after the military installations. What you do is that you go after the armies, you go after the supply, you go after the logistics hubs, you go after the things that support the war machine. You don't wage unrestricted war with the terror bombing of the
UK and other civilian population centers, in which case the West responded to that.
Okay, so the Germans unleashed the Blitz after the British bombed Hamburg indiscriminately. That's what happened there. That was a retaliation to the RAF terror bombing
missiles into the UK when they got fed up with the Battle of Britain.
Agreed.
What are you talking about?
You're
acting as if that the Western powers, I'm saying Western powers, I know Germany was part of this, but you're acting as if the Allies went after them just randomly.
Because they did.
They started in reprisals because of the terror bombing of the missiles that Germany was firing into the UK.
And Japan was murdering
civilians en masse raping women on top of doing so. How are you acting like these are innocent parties? This is outrageous.
It's not outrageous. Okay, again, from a historical standpoint, the whole reason why the Germans decided to turn London into a pile of rubble is because that was a tit for tat. The Germans, when they were doing the Blitz, they actually bombed the church, if I remember correctly. The RAF then retaliated by firebombing Hamburg. That's when Hitler took the gloves off and said, okay, you're going to play this game, we can play it too. That is a historical fact. Now the case I'm trying to make is that you have to be able to separate the people from a government. A people is not always... Again,
you're arguing that I am for indiscriminate killing of civilians. Again, I've never made that argument.
Yes,
my argument was that I'm not a bleeding heart for the Nazis.
Can you clarify what that means?
For Imperial Japan.
What do you mean you're not a bleeding heart? What does that mean?
It means it's not something that I am not going to pour a lot of sympathy into it, is my point. Like, meaning I understand what the Allies were doing. I understand that when they went after Japan, they dropped the bombs and everything else. Again, I'm not for the dropping of the atomic bombs. We effectively did that in order just to see it because we built it. But if you're asking me, am I going to be this kind of, oh my God, I can't believe we did this to the Nazis, or oh my God, we did this to Imperial. No, I'm not going to be that guy. If you're asking me, is it right to go indiscriminately kill civilians? No.
Let me ask you this.
Trying to make an allegory between Nazi Germany and Hamas, I think you're out of your mind.
Okay, so let me ask this question. I'll go away and go back into producer land. Let's just say, for example, if you had Mahé's job in World War II, he was the one who's in charge of the strategic bombing of Japan.
Right.
Would you have signed off on that? Would you have turned Tokyo into a funeral pyre? Yes or no?
The question doesn't entirely make sense.
It does.
Because you're asking me if I'm in the military position.
Yes.
And I'm in Admiral Hayes, where I have to make the military doctrine, and I am sitting in the seat of being the person who's making that choice.
Yes.
The choice is forced. You're asking a military person whether or not the military person would take an action with the idea of breaking the will of Japan. The military person is always going to say yes.
Okay.
The question is not whether force, yay or nay. The question is what kind of force. Well, exactly where should the force be deployed? How much force? Right.
Yeah. Well, and also Marshall, who was the chairman of the Joint Chiefs, called them in and said, "What the hell are you doing?" So if we have to live with these people when this war is over, why are you destroying these nations? I mean, I'll make this very clear, and I'll go away. If it was me, I would have said not only no, but hell no. You don't murder people who have no say in what their government is doing. Collective punishment is wrong. And I'll go away now. Thank you.
I agree with you that collective punishment is wrong. But I think we're acting as if that there's not consequences for behavior. And there's consequences for bad behavior. And I suspect that part of the reason that we're making this argument is because we're Americans and our government does horrible stuff around the globe, and we don't necessarily want to be held accountable for the shit that we do around the globe, despite the fact that we're murdering, killing, slaughtering, et cetera. And we do this to innocent people all the time. I think your ultimate question is, should we be absolved of our government's behavior? And that's a question that I guess each one of us will have to answer. I will tell you, I am not a bleeding heart for Imperial Japan or Nazi Germany, and the crimes that they committed to innocent people, it's ghastly, to put it mildly. So
we can disagree. Okay, so Q&A show at 12 noon in 2.5 hours. Just a reminder, don't forget to tune in. Also, if you're just joining us on Rumble, we can explain the details later. We did it a little earlier in the show. But suffice to say that we would love it if you would just pop in and into the live chat. If you're watching live in the 9 o'clock hour on Rumble, just come in and seriously go into the chat and just say hi. You don't have to say anything else. It's going to help us immeasurably due to the Rumble, some changes in the Rumble creator program. So you don't even have to, you know, say anything of any intelligence. You know, act like you're a White House press secretary. Okay, here we go. Mr. Ailey, is Israel a shit stain on the countries who have influence, or the countries who have influence turning a blind eye? I don't understand that question. Philip Blair, 20, and we're going to.
What he's saying is basically, who's more culpable, Israel or the countries that pretend like Israel is not?
Both.
Both. Yeah.
I don't know who. I guess, you know, the guilty party is always more culpable than the people who stand by and watch. But still, Philip Blair, how many of the people in that Antifa, quote unquote, plot were working for the FBI in some way? That's always a good question. Yeah. Tim Bantek, we are hoping for a socialist movement. Nothing better for it than New York City. Communism was a Jewish thing. He'll turn the Jews around. Communism was, in large part, a Jewish thing. That's true. Anna, there is no crisis for AIPAC or Israel. They fully control the United States. I think
I would tell you, like in Civ, the moment that you get beside a country, you can start operations against that country. And I guess my feeling is AIPAC may not necessarily see, let's say, a sea change immediately, but obviously they're looking at this with concern. I would think they should be if I was them.
Frank Friel, 7254, would an electronic magnetic pulse or an EM pulse take out a data center? Is that a thing, or am I watching too much science fiction?
No.
Former physics major here. It's a real thing. Now, the thing is, a data center can be fortified to protect against it. Under the right conditions, it absolutely is a real thing. Pulses are weird, right? Like, literally, it affects simple mechanical devices like a bicycle. Like when the atomic bomb hit Nagasaki, people who were quite a distance away bicycling, their bicycles seized up. Their bicycle. Really? It's this, what could be a simpler device?
I don't know why that would happen. I mean, usually that's dealing with electronics, not.
No, but it's true. Like a nuclear, I mean, it's a well-documented phenomenon.
I would tell you, the first thing that's going to happen if we were at war with Russia is that they're going to launch a missile into the space to knock out our satellites. Oh, the impulse.
Acoustic.
That was the thing that the U.S. was bitching about. Oh, my God, Russia's going to know they have a nuclear weapon in space.
Sorry, Costa Constantino. So do you prefer that we watch the show on Rumble instead of YouTube? I think I speak for Robbie when I say generically yes, right, Robbie? Is that true?
It depends on the metric, right? So if all you're doing is watching the Rumble, then Rumble pays more. If you are a channel subscriber, on YouTube, like you have tiers. You have different tiers of membership that you're able to join. Rumble doesn't. It just has the $5 a month, but you get access to all the premium content and everything else. If all you're doing is watching, then yes, Rumble pays more, especially with the changes that are coming in with the new creator program. So it will pay significantly more. That said, the hurdle is going to be higher, especially for the shows that are adjacent to this one. So we got the program, we got TMI, and then we got Queen Black Gaming.
Yeah. And by the way, we definitely need you guys to help out with TMI and Putinbot. Again, if you just think of it and you're just like, oh, I'm fucking around, it's 10 o'clock in the morning, and I don't really want to watch TMI, although we wish you would, just come in and just say hi.
Well, the big thing, is just, for example, if you install the Rumble app on your phone and then just follow those channels, when they start streaming, you get a notification on your phone say, hey, TMI is streaming now, or Putinbot Gaming is streaming. Pop in at least once a month and just say hi, flip a bird or whatever. I mean, that helps. Yeah, I mean, call me a tard. I mean, it works perfectly fine. And I am retarded, so feel free. You will not hurt my feelings.
So it's good.
By the way, if you guys ever want me on either channel to pop in, let me know. Sometimes I'm free.
Done. We will do that. Okay. Yeah. So, Robbie, I think I'll leave you on here. You'll have something to say about this. Frasmataz, always with good questions. Tucker left the Republican Party. Does that mean he's going to announce Kirikou? Who's Kirikou? As his VP candidate.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if Tucker runs.
Going to run for president.
I hope that the man does. And I know a lot of people in the chat are mixed feelings about that. Personally, I think Tucker's had a come to Jesus meeting. I think the scales have fallen off of his eyes. Like he sees the Republican Party and the Democratic Party as the corporate whores that they are.
Like leaving the Republican Party. Like, I mean, it's not like, you're not a member of the Republican Party. You either are registered as a Republican with your local board of elections or you're not. I mean, but you don't, you know what I mean? Like, there's no such thing as a card-carrying member. But
there's more to it than that, right? I mean, there's a cultural element to it. It's like cultural Christians, right? They don't really do stuff, but they still consider themselves Christians. I think the Republican Party is like a similar way, where they're people you associate with, people you talk to. Said that himself.
Well, one of the things you've got to keep in mind is that Tucker's not just a normal guy. I mean, he's one of the most popular media influencers in the world.
True.
But what does it mean to say
So what that means is that Tucker has effectively said what he's going to do is that if there's any candidate that has allegiance to another nation, that he is going to actively work to make sure that that person has meaningful competition and wants to expose the Republican Party for what it is, which is huge.
Well, and wait a minute. Is that him investing resources into it or just his media company? Like, meaning, is he just talking against the candidate or doing something?
Or is he going to use some of that sweet Swanson fortune to...
I'm not sitting with the guy, but if I had to hazard a guess, I think that one thing that he's going to try to do is get him on his show, give him as much exposure as he possibly can. And if he really likes somebody and he thinks that that person has a shot, I think that he'll contribute. And there've been a couple of people like the dude who took out Crenshaw in Texas in the primaries. Tucker, donated that guy, put up his website, said, "This is the guy's the real deal. Let's take out Ipatch McCain." So, really? Answer your question. It's more than just talk with him. I'm telling you, the dude just had to come to Jesus meeting.
But I don't know. I mean, I just don't know what practice. And by the way, it would be sexist not to mention that Marjorie Taylor Greene also announced that she's leaving the Republican Party for whatever the fuck that means. I mean, you know, I guess I could announce that I'm leaving the Democratic Party. I mean, it doesn't mean
Marjorie Taylor Greene was weak. I'm sorry. Don't get into politics if you can't take heat like that. I mean, like, Trump bashes her and she puts in for retirement.
Yeah.
Are you serious? Are you serious right now? Like, meaning, do you think, and maybe this is a Robbie question, is it that she thought that she couldn't win with Donald Trump as a headwind against her, in which case she pulled out? Because otherwise...
That's what it is. For her, it's her grift, and she made sure that she resigned after she qualified for the congressional pension. So there's that. I mean, I'm on Team JT with this. Like, you know, y'all just saw me and JT just have a nice little friendly spat right here on right here on the air about collective punishment, whether it's right or wrong. If she was the real deal, she would have stayed in Congress and went down fighting and called Trump exactly what he is, which is a lying sycophant and a pig and a traitor to the country. If you're going to go down, don't resign. Go down fighting. If you're going to be Rocky and you're going to be fighting the big old Russian, by God, you better go in there and just start swinging.
Win, lose, or draw. Lundgren.
Yeah, I mean, who knows? Are you going to be a creator or going to be Rocky? You don't know until you get into the ring.
Dolph Lundgren was misunderstood. We have another comment here. John B. Cockfeller, thanks for the $2. I'm a scientist, not a lawyer. Does anyone know what the legal liability would be around an information campaign explaining to inner city junkies how much copper is in the average data center? I'm actually going to answer that question. I think it all depends on how you state it. If you're just sort of like, by the way, there's a lot of copper. You just leave it at that. You probably are safe from liability.
Yeah, and a lot of people
like, hey, junkies, you should go in there and get it. That would be a problem.
Yeah, and a lot of people are pointing out in the chat that that Marjorie Taylor Greene was saying that her family was receiving death threats, which is true.
I don't care.
Yeah, I was going to say big fucking whoop. I get death threats all the time.
I don't care. It's not that I think death threats are good. Look, I know you guys think I'm a hard ass on a lot of the stuff. It's not.
You are.
What did she expect? Like, you are coming out against
the king.
It's the game. It's just what it is. What it is. I don't
like, look. You live in Georgia. You have guns. Buy a big dog. You know. I mean, pay for some security. She's not poor.
By the way, Candace Owens gets death threats. Random, like, meaning anybody that is in media on some level will get, let's say, opposition to the person. Just in general, especially if you get up to a certain amount and you're, let's say, aggressive in pursuing your case. Marjorie Taylor Greene resigned for being right. Like, and that's the worst thing in the world to me. Like, you are pointing out, hey, why are we protecting pedophiles? Okay, gold star on that. Right? Good job. Why are we functioning at the behest of a foreign government? Okay, again, gold star. You're batting maybe not 1,000, but at the very least, a broken clock is right twice a day. Meaning you are hitting upon issues that are credible. Hey, why are people going without health care, but we're giving billions of dollars to Israel? That doesn't seem right. Yeah, you're right. That doesn't seem right. Basically, members in your family are going to go without health care because of what the president was effectively doing. Again, you're right. No. And yet you resign. on the things that you are effectively right on. That's weak to me.
Yeah, look, it's objectively weak. And there's other ways she could have said, like, look, Congress turns out to be bullshit and I can't get anything done there. All I'm doing is sitting in a bunch of boring meetings. So I'm going to now start a media company, or I'm starting a PAC or something. But instead, she just sort of like picked up her toys and went home. And like, yeah, she has every right to do that. She's a free agent. But like, we all get to say, why should we care about anything you have to say now? I think is a reasonable question. All right. A few more comments and then we got to move on to
one thing I want to point out real quick. Since we've done our call to action, at the start of the show, we had 74 unique chatters. We now have almost 100. So thank y'all for coming over.
Well, thank you. And that was super easy. Thank you.
Super easy. And seriously, all we need is, you know, starting next month on TMI, come by, say hi, how you doing? Come to Putin by Gaming. I'm actually going to start doing an actual real schedule from like noon to 5, but just I'm be treating it like a real job instead of like a hobby.
You're going to be doing the game for 5 hours.
Yeah, well, because you got a minimum of 500 watch hours, plus all the other stuff. So I'm be treating Putin by Gaming like an actual real client that I do work for.
But you don't want to lose metrics for that long.
Yeah, and also a lot of people ask me to do podcasts, so maybe we can have like a Robbie and JT dust off. We'll piss off the entire freaking world. I don't care. But I mean, seriously, we just need just people to just come by and say hi. Jump an emoji.
Mushroom cloud one morning. I'll know why.
Hey, it'll be fun.
All right, B Longbull. I have to admit, I'm embarrassed to read this, but it's a $10 donation, so I can't pass it up. Thank you so much. Yo came here because of John, but Ted is the real star. Always followed Jabarl and pleasant addition here.
Thanks, man.
Thank you. Another compliment, Teg Derb. Deprogrammed is one of the handful of podcasts I watch regularly, even though I frequently disagree with the hosts. You know, I got to say that's high praise. I call that the New Yorker phenomenon, which is this is no longer true, but then I hate the New Yorker. Always did. I hate the cartoons. I hate the type. I hate the tone. I hate the whole conceit of like there's certain elite gatekeepers who know better than you everything. Right. But there was always something that you really needed to read, usually by a war correspondent or something that you really needed to be in on the mix. If you didn't read it, you were left out. And so you'd find yourself buying this thing and reading it, even though you disagree with a lot of it. The New York Times used to be like that too. That's high praise. I mean, if I watch The Five on Fox, I disagree with all of it, but I watch it. It's entertaining. It's a good product. So it's like, to me, it's like, okay, I appreciate people who agree with us, of course. You guys are great, but it's like, it's super praise when someone's like, oh, you know, like, you know, I might not like agree with what Ted or JT has to say, but at least you don't think we're full of shit, or at least you think we're coming by it honestly.
Everybody always agrees with me.
Oh yeah.
Right. In general. I'm not polarizing at all.
The population agrees with you, Robbie. We all agree with you. You're not crazy at all.
Good boy. You're such a good boy.
Let me scratch you behind your ears, cutie.
So what y'all are here for.
Yeah. Too funny.
Okay. All right. So this is a real ass convo, says Jamar from Connecticut. I think Connecticut. Thanks for the $2. Okay, yeah. So it is a real ass convo. Okay, so
The
Antifa
war crime stuff.
Okay, let's do war crimes. Yeah, of course. So this new UN report, backed by UNICEF, which, you know, is kind of like, they're a pretty unimpeachable organization. Basically, this is the quote: one Palestinian child has been killed on average every day since the start of the quote unquote ceasefire 8 months ago. Quote, they were killed in their homes, in their schools, playing football, fishing. They were shot, bombed, and hit by airstrikes. Israel is, of course, as usual, calling this a blood libel and all lies, all terrible lies. But, you know, I mean, it's very disturbing. There's a lot of evidence that, you know, I believe the report. We know that there's been report after report after report about the Israelis intentionally, snipers intentionally shooting kids. There are a lot of kids in that population to begin with. But they're doing it on purpose. And it also draws the parents out so they can shoot them too. I'm at this point, the only thing that I find that there's the only light aspect to this is listening to the arguments of the Zionists who are still trying to defend this shit. I mean, it's indefensible. I mean, and yet, you know, you yell in your all caps social media posts, but nobody is buying what you're selling anymore.
There's a train going on behind me, which is why I have my mic off. I'm sorry.
I love that sound, by the way. It's one of my favorite.
I'm glad you do. It's one of my
favorite things in the world. Yeah. I love trains.
I prefer the prayers in the morning in the Muslim countries.
Oh, God.
And I got to be honest. I hated the prayers it's in the morning. In the morning.
Amazing. Yeah, yeah.
Well, I loved at 8 o'clock, no issue. 12 o'clock, no issue. 5 o'clock, no issue. 4 in the morning.
That's rough. Yeah, no, it's good. 4 in the morning is rough. Get up and pray, infidel assholes. Come now. Yeah,
well, what you don't typically hear, right, is the tune-up. Like in churches, they have like the tuning of the band and everything else. At like 3:40, you get the tune up where they're like getting their voices straight and everything else. And then at 4 are the melodic prayers and et cetera, et cetera. Me, who's typically getting to bed at 4 a.m., it's you know, but the rest of the day, I love it.
I always think that when like right wingers say, like, oh, what if radical Islam were to take over the United States? I'm like, well, there'd be one advantage. We'd get the call to prayer every day, which would be cool.
I didn't mind the call to prayer. I actually liked it. It's so melodic, and it's almost like music of sorts. It was just the 4 a.m. part. The 4 a.m. part was just rough.
It's absolutely this train
comes at like 5:30 in the morning or 5 a.m. every morning, so it's a pain in the ass. Look, this is ritual murder, for lack of a better term. 75% of the people who were killed in Gaza have been women or children. So this calling it blood libel is nonsense. It's hundreds of thousands of people who've been murdered, the majority of which being women and kids, because as you point out, a large part of the population are women and children. From their point of view, this is, quote, mowing the lawn, unquote. And honestly, if you were raised under this idea that the Muslims hate you, they all want to kill you, look at what happened in Auschwitz, look at what happened in the other death camps, this will happen to you if so-and-so. Meaning you are raised and programmed to be a monster.
People were like, they're also raised to be told like that these people were aligned with the Nazis, the chief, what was his name? The official from, chief Muslim official from Jerusalem traveled to Berlin and met with Hitler. That's true. That did happen.
It's the Mufti. It's the Grand Mufti of Jerusalem.
I guess my point is this is not shocking. I know some people who are looking at this and think to themselves, oh my God, I can't believe they're killing all these kids. It's not shocking if you take into account how these people were effectively raised. The overwhelming majority of the population of Israel agrees with Netanyahu's position. Anytime you've seen protests, those protests were just about the prisoners, not about what Netanyahu was effectively doing. And again, the majority of the population saw the video where they sodomized an inmate, and 60% agreed that it was okay for Israelis to do this. Like, we should really put into context what this society effectively is, and they are out of their
minds. It's sick. I've got to think that at some point they're going to, you know, the spell is going to break. It's kind of like if you
how go do you denazify
if you go Israel? To well, but yeah, they're going to they're going to have to be denazified. They'll be defeated. They'll be overrun. They'll be defeated, and then people will write memoirs like, I grew up going to the kibbutz and I was propagandized and all my friends were like us. And then, you know, I had one incident where I started to doubt, but I pushed it aside. They're all going to write these memoirs. They're all going to say, and then like the spell will break. And a lot of people will deny ever having felt this way. A lot of people who were Israelis in the former state of Israel are going to say like, you know, I don't know what was wrong with us. It's like the white South Africans, a lot of the white Afrikaners are like, I don't know what the fuck was wrong with me back then. You know, I think they genuinely believe it. They genuinely like think, it was a fever. I was propagandized, whatever. Now I can see the light.
Are they responsible for their actions?
Well, of course, everyone's responsible for their actions if they're undertaken freely, right? And
the catch is freely. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm asking. Is it really freely if you were raised a particular way and programmed to act a particular way?
Once you become an adult, certainly, yeah. I think so. Once you become an adult, we're all propagandized. I mean, you know, everybody's propagandized. I was, you were, we all were. We went to schools. We were propagandized by our parents, by our families, by our jobs.
This is very specific coding or very specific programming that is being dumped into them to elicit a particular response. Meaning the response that the Israelis have is the exact response that the Israeli government wants them to have.
Right. And the media is very effective, and there's people who scientifically study how to spread propaganda. Look, your question's really important, Jamal. I mean, I guess the answer is yes, you are responsible. But you know, are we going to identify those 60% that you mentioned who all think that you know ass raping innocent people is cool? Can we put them all in prison or into an insane asylum? Like, we can't because we don't have enough. We don't want to build prisons or insane asylums big enough to hold them. So, like, we're going to have to forgive them, right? And we're going to have to, you know, teach them and help them do better. But are they responsible for thinking that shit? Okay, this is where I'm on Team JT. I'm cold-hearted about this. I feel like if you're fucking stupid enough to let yourself be propagandized and you can't fucking think for yourself, Ted Rall doesn't have a lot of sympathy for you. Does Ted Rall want to send you to a gulag? No. Maybe to a re-education camp. But the point is, like, I hope you'll come back. I hope you'll fucking.
If Ted Rall was born in Israel and Ted Rall was sent to the concentration camps at 4 and say, this is what's going to happen to you if the Muslims will take over or if you don't have a Jewish state. And then at 5, they do the same thing. And at 6, they bring you into Israel that have you mingling around and you could see, maybe they take you to the bodies of Israeli soldiers or something like that without context. Meaning if they raise you this way from the time you were a child to the time you were 16, does Ted Rall think differently? I mean, the reason I'm asking this is because I think this is the operative question. I think people are also programmable entities. Like when McDonald's has this idea that if you get a child at like between 2 to 6, that you have them for the rest of their life, up to X amount of percentage. And if human beings are indeed that predictable, where programming lasts for years beyond the point of the programming, how do we define culpability in this context? That is a hard question for me. I don't have an answer for that.
I don't think it's ultimately answerable. I guess my point is that sort of, I think the Allies got it pretty right after World War II when they decided to concentrate on the big fish in terms of punishment up to and including death, and basically let the population in general off the hook. It's only later that they decided, like, you know, hey, we're running out of war criminals, so we'll go after, you know, a dude who was a low-level, you know, camp guard or something. They actually recently, right, convicted some chick who literally was a secretary at one of the death camps. I'm like, that's
like going, 90-something. Yeah.
That's going too far for me. But the point is, you do have to sort of say, there's culpability, but I guess more to the point, in the same way that when someone commits a crime, I want to redeem them. I'm not interested in punishment as much as I'm interested in seeing if we can like redeem this person and make them a useful member of society. I think the same thing with these people. It's like, you know, we got to like, you know, depropagandize them. You have to de-Zionify them and like teach them that like equality is an important, you know, important ethic for human beings. And I think, so I'd want to salvage them. That would be my main interest. Punishment doesn't generally interest me. And I don't think it's very effective. I don't think it's I think it's costly. You know, I don't know what it gets at, which by the way, segues nicely. And we should very quickly hit these three to our story about the Antifa thing.
By the way, I agree with you before you.
Thank you. Okay. This is a Robbie question. So Robbie, go ahead and pipe in. Robbie, $5 from Frank Field. Did you ever get to debate that Christian Zionist? If you did, I missed it. Be very quick. Very quick. We've got 3 minutes left.
No, he ducked on me. So he has decided he does not want to spar with your favorite. Y'all want to put on the Antifa? If we have a bunch of paid chats waiting to be answered.
Okay. Yeah. Peter I, thanks for the $2. Find myself agreeing with Robbie more and more. Last one that I see, tell me if I'm missing any, John D. Cockfeller, a dollar. Ted may not support sending them to Gulag, but I say we send them to the John D. Cockfeller Center for Israelis who can't think good and want to learn to do other
stuff. Right.
Zoolander reference. Okay. All right, last, and if I'm missing any, Robbie, let me know. So Antifa. So there was this assault, but not an assault, really. There was a protest at an ICE facility. Basically, 10 people show up. One turns out they have a gun. This is that thing where, you know, 10 people go out on a wild spree. And it turns out that, like, you know, your buddy's carrying a bag, a kilo of high-grade ash, and you all end up in the can. So he basically, when the ICE guys came out of the ICE gulag in Texas, he pulls out his gun because he said in self-defense, fired at the ICE officer, shot him, I believe, in the shoulder. Not cool, but I'm not saying this is cool. Although, you know, part of me really likes the sort of armed resistance aspect. Anyway, 100 years. The 600 people, all of whom by all accounts were unarmed, but because they're part of it, sort of like, you know, hey, if I shoot the bank, you know, you and I rob a bank together and I shoot the teller, you get blamed too, 50 to 70 and 30 years for someone who was just knew them and part and knew what was going to happen. I'm just going to go out on a limb here and say these people have pretty good grounds for appeal for cruel and unusual punishment.
I mean, this is the January 6th thing all over again.
Yeah, except like none of those sentences were anything like this, and those sentences were all commuted.
True, but the way that they were treated, some of them were treated for just being there. Look, I'm not making an argument.
We're not even being there, right? Like, like Enrique what's his name? He wasn't even there.
Yeah, but he had weapons stashed in Virginia ready for the revolution and some nonsense, waiting for Donald Trump to say the word, in which case they were going to attack.
They didn't give him 100 years, though.
True, they didn't give him 100 years, but it's the way that the government, and again, this is not me advocating for this, but states, and what I mean by states are governments, tend to be very aggressive at going after people who are attacking those governments because they wanted to be the main distribution of force, meaning they wanted to be the sole distributor of force. If you're attacking an officer, then they're going to respond viciously to the fact that you've attacked an element of the state. It just is what it is. The same thing was true for January 6th. The same thing is true for this. Obviously, they didn't give the people in January 6th 100 years, but some of those people were getting like 30, 40 years for just kind of moseying through. You shouldn't bring a gun to a nice facility.
No.
That's just bad. And shooting the cop.
You're going to get shot. That's my main concern is you will be probably killed.
Yes. I'm surprised they weren't. I'm surprised they weren't.
I don't really care about the ICE people. I mean, to me, they're monsters. Okay. So 12 noon, that's in 2 hours. That's the Q&A show. Robbie and I are going to, and Jamal are going to be having at it over matters of evolution and the Great Flood and the Age of Earth. But also,
that's what we're talking about.
Yeah, we are. And we're going to take your phone calls on Rumble. We're going to take your regular chats on YouTube and Rumble. So keep YouTube or Rumble. Go check it out. Rumble will be, if you want to make a phone call, for sure, do that. Thanks, everyone, for joining us. TMI show coming up right now. Thanks, JT. Thanks, Robbie. And I will see you on.
Come over with the raid and chat.
Do that. Yeah, please chat on TMI, even just for like a minute, and then leave. Okay, bye.